SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three at the races. And just minutes ago, the press release circulating from the Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. Brian Bouye joins us, and the announcement that usually has included rider, a trainer, some horses, it's going to have a solo baby spotlight when it comes to the contemporary inductees. Brian Bouye, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. Just a little stunned that we have one inductee to discuss right now.
That is correct. Heavenly Prize is the lone contemporary electee this year. We had a group of finalists, 10 finalists, and I think they were all very balanced. But a couple years ago, we instituted a minimum percentage to get elected to the Hall of Fame that you had to get majority approval. And this year, she's the only one that crossed that finish line. So Heavenly Prize is our lone choice this year.
And undoubtedly deserving. That doesn't come as the surprising part. The fact that, especially Brian, given that the discussion was that maybe the 50% plus one was going to be a low threshold, it's stunning that nobody else got in.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I think this ballot was very balanced, and I think that may have had something to do with it. We had a lot of candidates on here that I think, some people may have voted, to kind of cancel each other out, but who knows? I think there were it was close with a lot of the others. I mean, we did have several of the candidates get into that, 43 to 48% range. So we weren't too many votes away from having others in. So a few of them just barely missed this year. So I can see why some people are surprised. And, I was a little bit surprised myself when we saw the numbers.
Just so people recall, because it's been a few months since the finalists were announced. On the jock side, Robbie Alborado, Corey Nakatani, and Craig Perrette. And Craig Perrette has been a cause celeb on this show. Trainers, Mark Cassie, John Sheriffs, and David Whiteley. And among the racehorses, Blind Luck, Havre de Grace, and Geoponte. Those were the nine that did not receive majority of plus one or 50% plus one. Heavenly Prize, really the latest of the Phipps family legacy, and daughter of Seeking the Gold, and won nine and was second or third another nine times. And looking forward to talking to Shug McGahee, who crafts Hall of Famers on a regular basis. Oh.
Hello?
Did we lose Brian? There
nope,
we go.
I'm here.
I thought we lost you for a second. Brian, in terms of her and the way this goes forward, there's going to be the turf legacy inductees and there'll be the historic review committee. So there will be some inductees to go along with Heavenly Prize come on.
Yeah, this isn't totally unprecedented. The year Nick Zito got in, he was the lone contemporary candidate that made it, and I believe that was 2005. But we also have other categories. The year Nick got in, we also had a It was one of the steeplechase years. So this year we've got the Pillars of the Turf. And we looked back at that category and the committee that's reviewing them. You know, we've only had that category for a few years, so there are going to be more candidates eligible this year through that. So you'll see a lot of candidates there, and our historic review committee also will have some selections as well. So Heavenly Prize isn't just going to be the only one on the show, but, you know, we are impressed that she got in. I mean, she certainly had a fantastic career, like you mentioned there. 18 career races, never out of the money, beat some spectacular horses, Sky Beauty, Passiana. I mean, her losses were, you know, Inside Information, Serena Song, Cigar. So she was truly a worthy champion, won 8 grade one. So we're excited about her getting in. And you mentioned it, the Phipps legacy there, and Shug just churning out another Hall of Famer. So it's very impressive. As far as the, you know, the other finalists, you know, I think a lot of them will get in. I think, you know, it just might be the wrong year for them. You know, we've seen some very good candidates that have had to wait. You know, I think Blind Luck and Havre de Grace and Giopani were all terrific race horses. And the jocks that we mentioned and the trainers that we mentioned, you know, I think they're all going to get a very good shot in the future here to get in.
Do you think that this result is going to spark another review or another brush fire about the format?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously every year the Hall of Fame, there's a, you know, there's discussion about who got in and who should have gotten in and who shouldn't have. You know, but I think that, you know, the percentage thing is something that's very important. You know, formerly it was the top four candidates that got in, and, you know, if the voters didn't particularly care for those candidates, you know, even if their percentages were low, they would get in no matter what. And I think we have to have high standards here for the Hall of Fame. You know, in the Baseball Hall of Fame, it's a 75% requirement to get in. And I think ours, I like the majority approval. You know, I think if, you know, the majority of the people think a horse or a human being should be in the Hall of Fame, I think it's a good standard to have. It helps us maintain high standards, but they're not unrealistic. So I think, you know, I think it's a very fair process. You know, and we had, like I said, we had a few that were very close this year. They just didn't quite make it. And people's votes and opinions change over time. So we'll see what happens.
The committee, and we'll talk to Jay Pridman undoubtedly this week about it, and Jay's involved, Steve Haskin too. Will the existing vote for the nine that did not make it across the threshold, will there be a review of how they get in or come back for another opportunity? How does that work?
Well, that's up to the nominating committee. What happens is each year, you know, we send out an email to all of the Hall of Fame voters and everybody that's involved with the process and say, do you have any candidates that you'd like to put forward for nomination? And the ones that were on the ballot that didn't get elected are automatically put on that initial list. And it's up to the committee to determine if they want to keep going forward with them as candidates for the final ballot. So our nominating committee, you know, they have a tough task because they review probably anywhere between 75 and 100 candidates each year initially, and they have to whittle it down to ones that they believe, you know, belong on the ballot for people to consider for the Hall of Fame. So three-quarters of our nominating committee has to approve these candidates to make the ballot. So so they are getting an endorsement from the committee that they should be highly considered for the Hall of Fame. But it is up to that committee. If they don't think that, you know, the candidates that were on the ballot this year are going to make it again, or they want to, you know, put different candidates forward, they can certainly do that. But they can keep nominating them. There's no minimum that we have to have on that ballot. If they think there's, you know, 15 or 16 finalists that are worthy of being considered, they're certainly welcome to keep putting them forward.
You mentioned the historic review and the Pillars of the Turf. There's also the Joe Hirsch media wing, and we just talked to Tim Layden about the passing of Bill Knack. When will we hear about the Hirsch media honorees?
Well, we usually do those in the fall, so it's for the year before. We did have the ones for this year. Michael Veach, who just retired from the Saratogian, is one of the ones that got in. You know, it's not really the Hall of Fame, but it's an honor that we do, you know, each year. And, you know, the Hirsch Award is something that, I mean, you couldn't think of a better name in the sport to name this after than Joe Hirsch. I mean, he was absolutely the dean, and to have you know, to have Bill Knack pass recently, it's tough. You know, he was everything he did. I mean, the man was a poet. There's no doubt about it. But you know, his legacy will certainly live on. He was one of the initial ones that got the Hirsch Award. You know, and this year it was Michael Veach, Jack Whitaker, and Barney Nagler. So, you know, certainly a very good listing there for this year's Joe Hirsch Award.
Firm date for the ceremony?
Yep, it's Friday, August 3rd. It's at Phasic Tipton, 10:30 a.m., and it's free and open to the public. So we hope people will come and check it out. There'll be a lot of great, you know, Pillars of the Turf candidates along with this, and a couple of really neat historic review ones that we're going to be announcing in a few weeks.
And while we have the opportunity, there's also the courtyard, right?
We got a lot of neat stuff going on this year. Our big Kentucky Derby party is on May the 5th, and we have our new courtyard unveiling, which is going to be in May. We're a little bit delayed with the weather. We've had, as you know, some rotten snow that's stuck around. So some of the work, some of the work's been a little bit delayed, but we're excited about having that come out this spring. And you know, we're hopeful that, you know, by Kentucky Derby Day, people will be able to come and see it, and then we'll have a more formal unveiling. But yeah, we got a lot of great stuff going on here.
When is the Derby? There's the preview and the party.
Yeah, we have our preview panel. It's the Saturday before the Kentucky Derby, which is on April 28th. It's at noon. We've got Michael Veach and Tom Amello, who are going to be panelists for it, and we give away free copies of the Blood Horse with all the past performances. We got some giveaways from our friends at Embrace the Race, and we discuss, you know, a lot of the key prep races and show some video reviews. We usually get a packed house for that event. It's a lot of fun. And then we have the Derby Day party. We're also doing events here for the Preakness and the Belmont. And on Belmont Day, we've got a new exhibit in our Von Stoddy Gallery called The Test of the Champion, which will look at some of the Belmont winners, this being the 150th running. It's a big anniversary, so we're going to, you know, have a lot of the artwork and trophies and stuff in the Von Stoddy Gallery for display.
And I will also mention the gala, the ball. When's the ball this year?
Yeah, the ball is the week after the Hall of Fame induction. So the inductions are on Friday, August 3rd, and the gala is on Friday the 10th, a week later. So it's the night before the four-star day here in Saratoga.
Very nice. And that's always a beautiful event as well. Brian Bouye, I appreciate it. Heavenly Prize, the contemporary inductee, and certainly worthy. We'll continue to watch and look forward to some other names being added, so that she doesn't feel lonely when
she
goes.
No,
she
won't. I guarantee you there'll be some good ones there. So we'll keep in touch, and we'll keep you posted on all the others that are going in this year.
Outstanding, Brian. You know what? I'm a little surprised that this announcement. This seems a week early, and you've got to be. It's got to be a little tough on you. It's Patriots Day. You should be at Fenway.
I wish. I'm actually about to make a 12.5-hour drive down to Lexington. I'm down there for the week for our spring board meeting, and then a couple of days at Keeneland. So, yeah, I'd love to be in Boston for Patriots Day, but it's probably a little wet and raw there as well. So,
One of the great, when you're a New Englander, one of the great traditions, having grown up outside of Hartford, Patriots Day and 11 o'clock start at Fenway, the marathon and everything else. And Brian, much like Jim Cassidy out in California, always with a Yankee hat, other than formal and semi-formal occasions, you don't see Brian without a Red Sox cap.
Yeah, they make me dress up and wear the suit and tie for certain events, but you know, I'm a huge Sox fan and like to represent it whenever I can. So,
well, we won't bring up your allegiance to Duke. That's problematic. So
that didn't work out so well this year. But the Sox, I'll take that 13-2 start anytime. So.
Well, and it's Chuck Simon who's been feeding me the Red Sox thing I knew because I always see you with the Sox cap, but the Duke side of things that's I don't know.
Hey,
gotta rethink
it's,
that.
It's all in good fun. Chuck and I are always going at it on Facebook. So
you and the rest of social media world.
You're Chuck, not kidding.
Chuck is like King Kong on top of the Empire State Building, swatting planes.
Yep.
Brian, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Steve. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
You got it.
Too funny.
Heavenly Prize. And we'll certainly talk to Shug. And we've had Heavenly Prize conversations with Shug before. But what a great career. And I'd have to sit and look at the PPs to figure out which I
saw, and certainly at Saratoga, certainly the summer of 95, we saw her. And I got to think about, I suppose, the Alabama. I got the only resource I have for this is Phil Melnick, my buddy Phil, who will tell me the times we got to see Heavenly Prize, but we saw her plenty, and she was wonderful. And we'll talk to Shug about her as well. How about that? And here it is. Won at first asking by 9, and then won the Frisette, although she wasn't favored. And Mike Smith wrote her first 8 starts. First 8 starts, and then Pat Day the rest of the way. Her grade ones, the Frisette, the Alabama, the Gazelle, the Beldame, the Apple Blossom. There you go. The Apple Blossom. She beat Halo America and Passiana that day. The Hempstead, the Gopher Juan, the Morris. And then she closed out her career with 3 board hits, but good performances behind Serena Song and the Beldame, and way behind Inside Information, of course, in the distaff in 95. And then in the Don, behind Cigar and Wakiva Springs. Well, she was a good third. Heavenly Prize, your only contemporary inductee, and the situation regarding, I mean, Craig Perrett, and I guess I'll find out the details, but Brian is saying that, you know, there were a couple of people that got 48%, I guess, a couple of entities that came close. I'm anxious for Jay Pribman's take on this. And we'll talk to Jay. All right. Well, we'll take a break. We're coming toward the bottom of the hour. Todd Pletcher is going to join us in a few minutes, so we'll have time for one more segment, and then we'll talk to Todd. I voted. Let me go back to that list. Where did I have it? I voted for Heavenly Prize, Craig Perrett, and David Whiteley were my votes. Those are the 3 that I voted for. The Perrett situation is ridiculous. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine Unlock and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 384643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Take a look in the mirror. What do you see? Do you see it clearer? Or are you deceived in what you believe?
We're back at the races. Just past the bottom of the hour, we'll talk to Todd Pletcher in about 10 minutes. And Todd with obviously another big Saturday and big Friday when you fold in the win by Unbridled Mo. And, you know, one thing that I thought, I didn't really notice it at the time because you knew that Unique Bella was going to be, you know, 2-5, 1-5. But Unbridled Mo only went off at just over 9-2. She took, you know, I mean, somebody had to be second choice, undoubtedly. But she was just under 5-1. Nobody else was less than double digits. Tiger Moth was 14-1. And by the way, in yet another stroke of cleverness. Machismo didn't run well on Saturday, but for $62,500, Ron Paolucci claimed Furiously Kissed and then ran her back in this spot. And she was third. She got past Streamline under C.J. McMahon. So 62.5 buys a grade one placed mare. And of course, Furiously Kissed, got a nice enough record anyway. You know, she's going into this. You know, she had earned $175,000 for Anita Cawley. And, you know, comes from Mrs. Cawley's very nice female family. You know, the French Kiss, and is a Langfure mare, 5-year-old. So this was lucherific. very clever. Grade one placing for her. We'll say probably tomorrow we'll get to Ron Moquette. I'm sure that Ron and company are all, you know, this is always a getaway day yesterday and today for everybody to scatter to the winds. Horsemen going to Kentucky and I suppose other points, Prairie Meadows, Canterbury and more. So we'll talk to Ron tomorrow. You know, we can do just a couple of minutes here. Let me get you acquainted with what has transpired if you didn't get a chance to see the way the Derby field shaped up. And after Magnum Moon's win, he ends up topping the point board with 150. Good Magic, Audible, Noble Indy, Vino Rosso. There's the first five. And it's more than interesting. I just looking through this, of course, the Malibu Moon, Magnum Moon is a homebred. And technically, so is Good Magic with Stone Street. And of course, Bob Edwards, E5, but then Stone Street came back, and so that's a quasi homebred. And so is Noble Indy, really, from Windstar. The next, your next five, Bolt Doro, Windstar bred, but a purchase, obviously, Mick Ruiz. Enticed, Godolphin homebred. Mendelssohn, Justify, and Quip. Quip is also a quasi. Enticed is a homebred by Godolphin. Quip is partly, you know, has got the partnership, Windstar, China Horse, and SF, but bred by Windstar. Your next five, Flameaway, Solomini, Bravazo, My Boy Jack, Promises Fulfilled. Bravazo, a Calumet, homebred. And then the last five, Free Drop Billy, Lone Sailor, Hofburg, Judmont, homebred. Firenze Fire, homebred by Ron Lombardi. And Gronkowski, the Phoenix Thoroughbreds, Lonro, that gets in on the carve-out. Looking at, you know, the commonality, it's kind of hard not to, you know, not to mention, obviously, the four by Pletcher. Windstar, you know, whose name obviously just came up repeatedly. Windstar, Audible, Noble Indy, Justify, Quip. And we'll see about what they're going to do. This quote from Saturday from Elliot Walden, unsure, and I'm sure, you know, for Rudolph Brissette, it's a big opportunity. Obviously, we'll see what they end up, you know, where they stand. Generally, those kinds of comments seem to lead more toward horses participating in the final analysis than not participating. But we'll see. On that breeding side, we talked, of course, with a little bit going into the weekend with Sid Fernando, but the three Scat Daddies, Mendelssohn, Justify, Flameaway, the two Medaglia d'Oros, Bolt Doro and Enticed, and the three Curlins, Good Magic, Vino Rosso, and Solomini, and then no other duplicating. Malibu Moon has got Magnum Moon, Into Mischief, Audible, Take Charge Indy, Noble Indy, Distorted Humor, Quip, Awesome Again, Bravazo, Creative Cause, My Boy Jack, Promises Fulfilled, Shackleford, Union Rags, got Free Drop Billy, Lone Sailor's a Majestic Warrior, Hofburg, the Lone Tappet, Poseidon's Warrior, Firenze Fire, and Lomro. So there's your breeding side. And for those that are keeping tabs at home, Sal Kuman's involvement. Sal got, he's got the two that he bought into, of course, Justify and Audible, and My Boy Jack, too. My Boy Jack. So Sal has got, he's got a piece of three Derby participants. And all, I tell you what, that's not a bad, that might be a good trifecta. Justify, Audible, and My Boy Jack coming late to pick up third. Sal could hit the board across all three. It's a fascinating field. I just you can't help but be excited by this. And, of course, the Mendelsohn equation, you know, is you can't even call it a curveball. It's a knuckleball. It's a knuckle curve. It's a slider. It's all different kinds of pitches at once. It's so different to have a horse, an international participant. We've got the two. We got Gronkowski, who just seems not nearly as capable or as much of a, you know, a player into this field. But I will not begrudge anybody that has got some, you know, some degree of interest. This is going to be a lot of fun the next few weeks. And Todd Pletcher, we're going to reach for right now and talk to Todd about another big weekend. I think we've talked to Todd, what, four straight or three of the last four Mondays, something like that. This, you know, to sweep the, I should pull that up too. How many times has that happened? The Apple Blossom and Arkansas Derby double. That another element to Todd's success this, you know, this early spring, late winter campaign. I'm sure that's been, yeah, I mean, that's got to be, I'm sure it's been done, but Baffert probably, right? Baffert might have done that. Maybe Todd knows. Todd adds the Apple Blossom Arkansas Derby double to the resume when they, I don't know if they'll put that on the Hall of Fame plaque when the time comes. Todd Pletcher joins us again this Monday. Congratulations.
Thank you, Steve.
Todd, this to some degree, of course, the upset on Friday, you had a taxing assignment when it came to facing off against Unique Bella. And then on Saturday, a different kind of challenge. But to win for the Brunettis and the Lowe's, I thought that part of this was an added layer of satisfaction that a trainer can be happy for his owners.
No question about it. When you see the reaction from those guys, and I think to have a grade one win for a homebred at an emotional time, you know, with the family, that was particularly rewarding. And then for the Lowe's to come back on Saturday and win a race at their, you know, essentially their home track that they love to race at and be a part of. I think it was, it's part of what makes our job fun when you see the reactions that they have after victories like those.
Let's talk about the Friday race first, and knowing what Unique Bella represented as a favorite and how you were going into the race and your thoughts as things developed not the way anybody might have expected.
Well, you know, I mean, we knew that Unique Bella was planning to go there, and, you know, the part of that meant that, you know, if she showed up and ran her A race, that she was going to be awfully difficult to beat. On the flip side of that, we felt like it was leaving a grade one race that was perhaps, you know, a little less deep than a lot of cases, and we had a filly that was doing very well, and just looking at our options with her, we could go back to a race like the Double Dog Dare, which she'd won last year, and it's only $100,000 purse and not a grade one. So we just felt like our filly was doing well. It was a grade one opportunity that even if she didn't win, getting grade one black type would be important to her resume. And, you know, the old adage is you don't duck one horse. So, probably caught a little bit of a break when it rained some and obviously caught a big break when Unique Bella didn't get away from the gate in good order. So, you know, those were the couple of opportunities we were hoping for, and then our filly stepped up and delivered a big race on her own.
And she really did. I mean, for those that want to be, want to put the asterisk and say that, Unique Bella had problems. Okay, that's true, but she got into the race fast enough and ran well. Unbridled Mo was coming steadily, and she put in a very nice run, and you could see off the turn that she was just motoring.
Yeah, she really was. I mean, she got into a comfortable rhythm once she kind of got out of the – she had a little bit of traffic on the first turn, but once she got clear of that, she was able to get into a good rhythm and tick to the outside, which she seems to be a little more comfortable there. And once Ricardo was able to get her out in the clear, she just – she kept coming resolutely. And, she's a filly that has sort of – quietly up until winning a grade one, put together a pretty, pretty impressive resume. You don't see too many horses go seven for their first 10. And she's been able to do that and sneaking up on $1 million in earnings now. So she's kind of, like I said, quietly, put together one heck of a resume.
Agreed. 7 for 10, and it's funny when she doesn't perform, she really doesn't. She off the board, the other three times. But this is a Brunetti homebred, and in your conversations, how is the family moving forward from what you can tell?
Well, I think, I communicate mainly with Rick Sacco, who's their racing manager, and we talk about, for example, which of one of these races we were going to go in, but it seems to me like the family is very enthusiastic about carrying on and, excited to have a horse like this. And I think, for the most part, it's business as usual. And, it's great that the family developed the same passion for racing that Mr. Brunetti had.
Well, business as usual in a Derby prep as well on Saturday. Turn our attention to Magnum Moon and lightly raced and late getting started, but having the same kind of success on Saturday that he had fashioned in the Rebel. Your thoughts going in and then watching him lead him around?
Well, thoughts going in were the horse was training exceptionally well, and we had exactly the schedule we wanted in between the Rebel and the Arkansas Derby. Everything had gone according to plan. He'd trained like he was coming up to it with another big effort under his belt, and so we were optimistic. And those scenarios always make you a little more anxious, a little more nervous when everyone's expecting you to win and you're expecting to win also. So just talking to communicating with Luis a little bit before the race, the one thing that we felt like might take place is we felt like that Solomini would show a little more pace this time and come out a little more aggressively. And so, our first thought was if he does that, then we're gonna be stalking him and keeping an eye on him, as we felt like he was the horse for us to beat. And But, I also told Luis, look, if he doesn't go and you find yourself on the lead, don't be afraid of that scenario, because this horse will have no problem doing that if the fractions are right and he'll relax. And so, I thought Luis did the right thing. He helped him out of the gate a little bit. And once he saw that Solomini wasn't there, he was able to secure a spot going into the first turn. And I think Florent was happy with the position he was in with Quip, who was essentially getting the same trip he got in the Tampa Derby. So, that was a pretty fairly run race from there. He was able to kind of slow down the second quarter a little bit. And, what I was impressed about was they finished the last 3/8 and 36-2 and last 8th and 11-4. And anytime you're going a mile and eighth for the first time, that's encouraging.
Very much. And the come home time, the whole length of the stretch, that's a come-home time, despite him not running a straight line, Todd. And address your thoughts on him getting out a little bit and what it might have been an indication of.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, talking to Luis about it, he felt like that part of the factor was that Oaklawn's one of the few places where the starting gate after the race begins is pulled to the infield. So, with Oaklawn not having a turf course, they just pull the gate right into the infield, and it sort of sets, in this case, right at the eighth pole. So he felt like that he was looking at that, and that's why he kind of started to drift out, and he drifted out into five or six path and pretty much past the eighth pole. He didn't seem to drift out a whole lot more than that and kind of stayed there. So he also saw some prints on the track that he sort of bunny hopped a little bit right there at the eighth pole. So he was definitely looking around a bit and still, he's obviously doing a lot of this on natural talent and still learning. But I was encouraged by the fact that even though he was doing that, he was still running on strongly through the wire. And it's not something that we've seen anywhere else besides his two races at Oaklawn. He did it a little bit in the Rebel, but not to the same degree that he did it the other day. But it's not an everyday occurrence with him, or it's not something that we ever see in his morning breezes.
Well, you come out of this, and typically the Arkansas Derby horses don't really need a lot. You've got 3 weeks, and we talked obviously last Monday and got some of the directive when it came to Vino Rosso and Audible, and now you've got a fourth to add, and really the only horse that has been kind of out of sight, out of mind, Noble Indy. Got a riding assignment yet?
No, we haven't firmed up a final rider on Noble Indy yet. We're talking to a few guys and buying a little bit of time, and I got to talk to Elliot Walden and Mike Rapoli and everybody come together on, someone that we're comfortable with. You don't want to wait too long. At the same time, you don't want to make a decision too soon. So, and we'll probably need someone that's going to be flexible in terms of if something in the last minute changes and Johnny or Javier were to come open, that they'd be willing to step aside if that were to happen. So those are some things we got to work out before we give a call.
Very good. Timing and training plan, how do you foresee the moving the chess pieces?
Well, right now we have everybody based back at Palm Beach Downs. Magnum Moon had a smooth trip back. He was actually back in a stall by 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon. So it was a smooth journey that way. And everyone will stay here at Palm Beach Downs until the 23rd. And we'll ship to Louisville and have one work over the track there. And Audible and Noble Indy and Vino Rosso will all work here one time at Palm Beach Downs between now and their departure for Louisville.
Some updates on particularly on Noble Indy, who I get the sense is a horse that is a little bit of out of sight, out of mind. And everybody talking about the others, what has been going on with him?
Had a very good 5 furlong breeze here on Friday. I thought for him, it was pretty enthusiastic. He went 101, and I like the way he did it, and he's hasn't missed a beat, hasn't missed a day of training all winter. Just it's been a steady, solid progression with him. We like the way he's maturing mentally. His behavior around the gate and some of those things that we had some issues with early on, he seems to really be figuring out. And he's just he's doing super. So we're hoping for 20 more, 19 more good days like we've been having. And, we're always keen to see that work over the surface at Churchill and how they get over the track there. But, he's a horse that's trained well at Palm Beach Downs all along. He's a horse that ran well at Gulfstream and ran well at the fairgrounds. So that gives you optimism that he'll he'll handle just about any surface.
Well, looking at this group, obviously a unique approach in the lead up to win these four races, Todd, to put it in perspective, Jay Pribman making the point that it's never been done before. Bobby Frankel won four with two horses. Nobody's done this with four different horses.
I mean, we're just fortunate and blessed, and you know, sometimes it just works out where you move the chess pieces in the right direction, and you know, you have horses that go to the new tracks and handle the surface the way you want them to, and all those different things. But yeah, just we're fortunate everything fell into place.
Well, a couple of other things to note from Keeneland, actually, on Saturday. And Pony Up, it feels like a horse that is going to get better as the year goes on.
He is. You know, he's a horse that we've kind of always liked, and he's run well on three different surfaces, and, you know, he seems versatile. He's out of an APND mare that gives you hope that, you know, he's going to continue to get better and better, and he's sort of figuring out how to run. And I was pleased with his effort. You know, in the Lexington, he put in a good sustained run, and I agree with you. I think he's a horse that, you know, we could see take a bigger step forward during the summer and fall.
Speaking of steps forward, that Nightcap winner on Saturday, I had some interest in the pick four and pick five, and when Alboro Bello drew in, looked like she would be a likely winner, and then ran a big race.
Yeah, I mean, she's a filly that we've been very high on since early on, and it's a little surprised that she didn't win first time out, but you know, she put forth a good effort and trained very well since then, and we expected improvement. Happy that she drew in, and you know, she was very straightforward, very professional, and acts like a filly that has a future.
Well, same with that Cava de Rossi.
Yeah, you can say it however you want, but Cava de Rossi, I'm not sure the pronunciation, but you know, he's a colt that ran okay in his debut. Seemed like he got swept off his feet a little bit. We were looking forward to stretching him out, and thought he ran really well despite getting some early pace pressure. He held on pretty well, and you know, I think it was a second effort, and you know, the time of the race was pretty much the same as the Lexington, so that's encouraging that he's moving forward.
Cava de Rossi is at least how we'll send people for those that are trying to write these
down.
We'll
go with that.
And a couple of quick notes, a couple of beats. Hedge Fund, was he just unhappy not to be on the lead and kind of pouted?
Yeah, he just missed the break. You know, he threw his head right at the start, and you know, that took him completely out of his element, and kind of resented the kickback early on, and it was just sort of all over at the beginning.
And Chip Leader ran all right.
Thought he ran well. You know, he's proven to be a versatile horse also, similar to what Pony Up. He's coming off a good effort at Turfway. You know, we were optimistic because we felt like we had a pace advantage, and he was able to control things. But you know, unfortunately, our rated superstar was just too good on the day. We were simply second best, but it was a very commendable effort from him.
Well, a very satisfying end to the run to Churchill, and four Todd Pletcher trainees. 20% of the gate come Derby, Todd. Best of luck keeping them all on the steady course. Looking forward to what's up ahead.
Absolutely. Church. Thanks so much, Steve.
I appreciate it. Todd Pletcher. And there you go. You're up to speed. No decision on Noble Indy. We'll have to wait and see. I was hoping to sneak that in. Want to thank Todd and Brian Bouye from the Hall, Tim Layden, Johnny D, Mike McCarthy, Brian Lynch. It's a Monday, and so limited racing, obviously, today, coming out of a big weekend. Still lots to do tomorrow.
if you want to play. Mahoning Valley and Parks and Sam Houston, Turf Paradise and Will Rogers, your options. Replay tomorrow, 9 a.m. live. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.